Mahadevan.
Kevin Koval, what's good?
Back at it again.
Yes, indeed.
It never stops.
It does not.
How do you feel about that?
Tired. I'm okay, though. But we took off a week, right?
Not really. I mean, we're stacking because we're trying to be smart about this. But are you well?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm good.
We're enjoying the overproof stolen rum this evening.
We are.
Yeah. How do you enjoy it?
I put some coconut water with it.
Yeah. How do you like that mix?
It's good.
Yeah. I'm enjoying it because we have a long night tonight.
We do.
I'm enjoying it in some coffee.
Oh, interesting.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. I don't know what you call it, but Max.
Is that
Max
a thing?
Max has made a drink. It's kind of like the island. It's not an Irish whiskey. What the fuck do they call a coffee and whiskey?
It's usually an Irish coffee.
So they call it like the Caribbean coffee. Yeah.
Did you make that up?
Yeah. Max is out here.
I love it.
You know.
Well, I usually like rum in a coconut.
Okay. Right. So that's what you went for.
That's really the best way to consume rum.
Salutes to your hair this evening.
Oh, thanks.
There's
no context for that.
I want to say a few things. Also, congratulations on an incredible and very powerful month at the Today at Apple programming, the first ever Chicago Music Summit Apple.
Thank you.
I know there's a big lift.
Yes. It's October. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, no. Back at it. I want to say this is a personal plug. On October 12th, we are doing, Langston, Alston, and I have a chapbook release at Volumes Bookstore in the evening. We have a chapbook coming out called Milwaukee Avenue. So folks should
it's
come
really
out
dope.
To that. Mm-hmm. We're excited for that. Langston, of course, is a Corner Store alum and the illustrator of our logo.
Cover art.
But today...
Yes,
this
today.
Evening mm-hmm. we have. It doesn't stop really. Like we are talking to some of the illest people on planet Earth. Our guest tonight has had a continual run of just beautiful, important insertions into the public sphere. A public artist, a muralist, someone who works in the studio, someone who is tireless, I think, in their advocacy of underrepresented stories, both in this city and around the world. And I'm very excited to talk with a brilliant visual artist. Sam Kirk is in the Corner Store tonight. Sam, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for being
here.
Yeah, we're excited to have you.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot to talk about.
Okay.
and before we do, just out the gate, we always welcome people in the Corner Store with some a couple of goodies. And so I don't know how I feel about these things, but just, to begin with, we do have a Arizona iced tea mixed with some raspberry flavor. I feel like that isn't real raspberry. I don't know how you feel
describing
about such things.
It as flavor.
That works. Okay. I mean, I haven't had a can this size since probably high school, but
no,
it's good.
The can is as big as most two flats in Chicago.
No, but that's the can.
Or my head.
The 99-cent can.
Yeah, 99-cent can.
You got a small head.
No, yeah, it is a bazooka of diabetes, and then we also have
no shots.
We also have. I love these actually, but I don't eat them anymore because I'm so like old and washed that
like
I can't
sugar.
I don't love sugar, but also like my teeth can't handle this anymore.
It hurt.
It's just I feel like, but Swedish fish.
Damn, I'm not there.
The
yet,
enlarged
so keep that.
Swedish fish, a fat-free food. It says
I definitely get down with the Swedish fish.
Okay,
all right, that's what's up.
those are the big fish.
Enlarged. Yeah, those
they're enlarged.
Those fish.
What a word.
Eaten, those fish
enlarged.
Have drunk deeply in the Chicago River.
They need like five other Swedish fish to get that big.
That's right. But yeah, please feel free to indulge now. Share if you wish. Tara would, I think, enjoy some Swedish fish.
Well, listen, my teeth are in great shape.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
you know.
I gotta keep mine for the duration. So
of your life.
Yeah, exactly. So
it's gonna be like another 100 years.
I hope so.
I know you're a real old man.
Listen, I hope so. Sam, welcome. We have a lot to talk about. We want to just go to
That's
the very
it?
Beginning.
Don't That's we have it. Another snack?
There's no savory. Nothing savory. That's okay. You know, we got a long
it's
night.
Okay.
We got a long night.
It's all right. I like the sugar.
Okay, good.
Okay, yeah. Salutes to Max, who
no, he really carried all of those snacktress.
Yeah.
I mean, you're a boy.
I mean, look, it's 2018 and gender is a galaxy, as Safia Hillo says. Yes.
Tell you something funny.
Please.
I was at a bar the other night and I ran into my old intern.
Let me tell you, I'm not surprised. Just from start.
Yeah, right. Okay. And I walk out the bathroom and I see her and I like can't remember her name. So I go, bitch. And she turns around. She looks at me. Oh, I was wearing a wig, so she didn't really recognize me at first. Damn. So
was
that was really funny because I forgot her name. That's but shout out Marlena. What's up?
Oh, well, yo, shout out Marlena. well, Sam, if we can delve in a little bit,
absolutely.
Let's just begin from your beginning. Where are you from?
I'm born and raised south side of Chicago.
You already know what it is.
What part?
Oh, man. I lived all over the south side. I'd say probably between birth and adult. We moved probably 9 or 10 times.
Wow.
So I've lived in a lot of different parts of the south side of Chicago.
For what reason?
My parents were both working class. So we moved for a combination of, you know, where neighborhood was good, where they felt like we might have better surroundings. Always, you know, just trying to get to the next step. And then also, I'm from a mixed family. So there were definitely some times where my mom had a harder time than my dad did in certain neighborhoods. So we moved sometimes.
What a mixture.
I am Puerto Rican, Mexican, German, and Irish.
Oh, okay.
Wow, that's a particular Chicago blend.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. That's better than Garrett's.
It is. Yeah, and both of my parents were born and raised in Chicago, too.
How did they meet?
They both lived in Bridgeport.
Okay.
Actually. And families both come from really big families. I think on both sides there's like 8 or 9 siblings each, and just somehow there was an overlap. This sounds weird every time I say it, but my aunt was married to my mom's brother initially. They're both older than my parents.
Oh, your dad's sister.
And then I think there might have been like a
little introduction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Let's keep it in the family. Cute. That is cute, right?
Every time I say it, people are always like, wait a second, what? And it's like, no, it's not.
It's not what you think.
What you're thinking.
Yeah. I married my sibling.
Right. Exactly.
So what do and did your folks do?
So when I was younger, my mom worked a lot in retail. And
where at?
Sam's Club for a long time, Walmart, which was horrible for a while. She was at McDonald's. So, you know, just really whatever she needed to do. For a long time in our life, my mom worked 2 to 3 jobs. So she was waitressing at night. She was doing banquets at night and then also doing like stocking shelves and stuff during the day. My father worked a lot in warehouse. So he did a lot with just warehouse management, like forklift driver. So working class jobs.
Yeah.
Were there a lot of you at home? A lot of siblings?
There's 4 of us. Okay. I have an identical twin sister.
Oh.
Yes.
That is news.
I did not know that. Yeah. Chicago. Right. Okay. Maybe I've said what up to her.
There's
before.
A good chance. And if she didn't say what up like, back, that was probably her.
She'd look at me. I'm like, what's damn, Sam Kirk does not fuck with me.
My sister's name is Jennifer.
Okay.
But she's Jennifer. Pretty reserved.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So y'all are different.
We're different.
She's
we're definitely
not a,
different.
A public icon.
No, not okay. at all. My all sister's an emergency room nurse.
Oh.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And her job suits her perfectly.
That's wild.
So, yeah. Actually, all three of my sisters are going into medicine. I'm the only
all women.
Creative.
Oh,
all
that's
women.
Dope.
In the squad. Yeah.
That's
all women. Mhm. Yep.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So, seeing your folks work a lot and work that hard as a young person, that must have influenced you in a lot of different ways.
I mean, absolutely. I think it definitely influenced me, and even now, just a work ethic to not stop and to continue, you know, pursuing and pushing until I get to where I'm trying to go. That is definitely without a doubt part of it.
I'm going to jump ahead, Tara, a little, and we're going to come back. But isn't that something that makes this city the best city to also make art in?
Yeah.
Because in part, I mean, and we've talked about this, and this is also a Midwest thing, maybe, Tara.
Yeah,
but just the idea that in this region, you know, we are working people, we are from and made by working people. And so And when you delve into the creative fields, you also take on that ethos and that kind of rigor.
Without a doubt.
And you apply that to your art.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I mean...
And then you have, like, the immigrant or, like, marginalized person, you know, background on top of that.
Yeah, there's a lot of layers of different Salt types Bay. Of working class.
That's right.
Totally.
Yeah. So, all right. So you're seeing your folks work very hard.
Yep.
A young Sam Kirk, what are your interests as a kid?
I wanted to be a construction worker as a kid.
Yeah. That's so specific.
It was a toss up between construction and an attorney, actually.
Yeah. That's two. Yeah. Interesting.
I don't really know what that was about, but I remember those being the two main things.
You didn't have like a wild aspiration? Like, I wanted to be a WNBA player. You know?
Oh, shit. I didn't know that.
Yeah, when I was like eight. I used to play basketball when I was little.
What? Are you nice?
I have not played in a while.
Okay.
So I'm
we
not
should
sure.
shoot around. We should get a little game of horse, something like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Don't film it.
Okay, that's fine. We'll be out here. A construction worker actually is not that surprising, given kind of like the scaffolding and shit that you are on now.
Right. I mean, it's kind of crazy because I'm afraid of heights.
Yo, me too. Okay.
Yeah.
Me too.
But still get on.
So you just don't turn around.
I don't turn around. I don't look down. Yeah. You know, I don't.
Probably
I try not to focus on, you know, what the equipment looks like too much.
But, well, so. I mean, and this is the fast forward, but like you do big ass story, multiple story,
like on a cherry
murals.
Picker type shit.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest was in Morocco earlier this year, 50 feet high. And that was that was crazy because my partner, Jen, came with me and she painted it with me.
Yes, right. I saw on the gram. You guys did that together.
Yeah.
It was beautiful.
That's dope.
Yeah, and one of the things she said, she was like, don't lean on the, like, rail because it's tied on with, like, this tiny wire.
No. Nope.
And that's it.
Nope.
So,
and you were like, why did you tell me that?
Well, I was glad she told me that because I sometimes get comfortable and forget kind of how high I am up. I just get in a zone and, like, just focus on what I'm doing. But this thing had all kinds of issues. Like, it was leaking gasoline.
I mean,
the cord was like, there was all kinds of things. So she controlled the machine and I painted. Wow. She painted as well, but she really mostly controlled.
Kept you all alive.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that is certainly a question I have, particularly later, is that part of your practice is also reliant on collaborations of many sorts.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm excited to talk not only here, but in, you know, you're going to be part of our first ever live episode, what we're calling the Mini Mart in a few. And I mean, you're newsworthy for a thousand reasons, but particularly because of a mural you were just participated in at the Center on Halsted, right?
Howard Brown.
Excuse me. And so I'm excited to talk about that. But collaboration has been a part of your practice, I guess, for a while.
But I
want to talk about that. But I want, like, were you as a kid? Were you someone who was into coloring, into art class? You know, when did outside of wanting to be an attorney and a construction worker, when did you begin to, you know, kind of pay attention to, you know,
art?
Yeah.
I mean, art was never really in my mind. It wasn't in my mind as a career path until my late 20s.
But you were drawing.
I was drawing, yeah. Art, the biggest thing that art did for me was it was a tool that I used to come out in high school.
Mm.
And I've drawn ever since I was a kid. I was definitely the kid that was drawing on the side of my homework, and I got in trouble for doing that. I drew on all my textbooks and everything. So I was definitely interested in it and found myself doodling and always interested in coloring and, you know, different art. And my mom was very influential in that too. She made sure that art was a part of our daily lives. You know, she always either took us to museums or found a way for that to be something that we were doing regularly.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and why was that important for her?
I think, you know, I've tried to get a lot of information out of my mom, and it's really hard. But from what I've gathered, I think because she grew up Afro-Latina in Bridgeport and was very different than everyone in her surroundings and even her family in my...
This is the Bridgeport of yesteryear,
yes,
too.
This is the Bridgeport of the 60s, 70s, 80s.
Leave notes on your car, or worse.
Exactly. Right, exactly. So, and my mom has a darker complexion, you know. So I think from her growing up and being very different, she found a need and definitely a benefit in us understanding different cultures and just being, just having broad interests, you know. So she sent us to school in Bronzeville for 9 years, even though we didn't live there. And when I asked her, you know, why did you do that? And she's like, you know, I just really wanted to make sure that you were surrounded by people that weren't, that you weren't going to see at home or that were very different than you. And as teenagers, if we wanted to do something, she'd be like, why don't you get on your bike and ride to the other side of the city?
Wow.
Like she was that mom that That's was so encouraging.
The most progressive
that,
mom yeah. on in, yeah. the in Chicago, maybe.
Definitely one of them, yes.
Yeah.
So that was very important to her. And I think because she instilled that in us, it just continued, you know. And the moving, even though the moving between different neighborhoods had a lot to do with, you know, finding a better place or whatever, for me, it paid off because I grew this, like, strong fascination with learning about people that were different than just what was in my family. I think, you know, growing up in Chicago, you could easily get used to the majority that surrounds you, but because we moved so much and my mom made some of these decisions for us, I was fascinated with wanting to, you know, figure out what else is in the city. So when she was like, get on your bike and go, we were like, let's go, you know, and we just took off and went and kind of explored the city. And for me, I know one of the biggest benefits was I have a twin sister. So we were always a team. And my mom, I think, really felt security in that, in knowing that no matter what, there was always going to be two of us together. We were always going to be together, and if something happened, one of us was going to call her. So I think she felt, you know, secure in sending us out in ways that she didn't with my younger sisters, you know. So
I'm sure y'all were like inseparable.
We were definitely inseparable until college, and then our interests went in different directions.
But damn, that's wild having a identical twin.
I mean,
there's you know, I've heard people talk and read about these bonds that are almost ethereal. I mean, do you all have kind of this almost like mystical type connection with one another?
We definitely do. There's a ton of different things that are just strange and weird that have happened, you know. To give a short story, I remember one time I called up my sister and she wasn't home. Her wife was there. And I was like, is your back door locked? And she was like, what? And I was like, just check your back door, see if it's locked. And so she went and she checked the back door and it wasn't locked, so she locked it. And that night, somebody tried to break into their house.
Whoa!
And so like crazy things like that happened. Or like I got into, I was at a club and somebody got in a fight and I was just in the wrong place at the wrong time. And I had gotten hit by some guy that was trying to hit another guy. And my sister called me at 3 a.m. and was like, are you all right? Like, I got a feeling that something's not right. And I was like, no, I'm not. I just got like knocked in the head.
Wow.
Wrong place, wrong time. And like, and she's like, all right, come by. So yeah, different things like that have definitely happened throughout our lives.
That's incredible. That's yeah. So you said you were, well, first of all, where did you go to high school?
I went to Maria High School, which is closed now.
Right.
Is that in Bronzeville?
No, that is in Marquette Park. Marquette Park.
Catholic school.
All girls Catholic
all
school.
All girls, yeah.
Yes.
Right.
Which,
wow.
So, yeah, tell us a little about that.
Which is quite funny because my mother wanted to send us to an all girls school so that there were no distractions.
Listen.
Well,
yeah.
Little did you know.
Little did she know her twins were both gay. My sister didn't come out in high school, though. I did. Not by choice, though.
Well, yeah. And if you don't mind, tell us this. Because you also said art helped in the process.
Yeah, so I really started to explore my identity around freshman year. Like, I knew that I had an interest in women. I didn't know what that was about because growing up, I mean, being gay wasn't even really discussed. I never remembered even hearing the words or having it talked about. So I was kind of like, you know, what is this about? This is odd. But I remember drawing in my sketchbooks and I would have all of these characters that had like both body parts or in a lot of ways they look kind of demonic. And being in a Catholic setting and like, you know, just what is kind of taught to you regularly. Right. I was like, what is going on? You know, so art in high school really was my tool of coming out. Like, it was where I can play with these emotions and these, you know, ideas and these thoughts. And I had some great teachers. One of my teachers really coached me through a lot of my work and, like, encouraged me to get, you know, a lot of it out. And I don't think she knew the direction I was going in, but eventually she figured it out. But in junior year, I started dating a girl in high school, and I passed her a note, and a teacher took it, and that teacher read it out loud to an entire class.
Damn.
So
it said something about...
Oh yeah,
well, it was yeah.
totally like yeah.
Yeah. young woman.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, the good thing was, weeks before that happened, I was at my house with this girl, and my mother was like, "I need to talk to you," and I was like, "Okay." And I was thinking, "Oh my God, what did she catch me about?" I did
shit.
So many things.
Yeah,
I was very adventurous as a teenager. I did so many things that I wasn't really supposed to do. And I was thinking, like, what did she figure out? And she just pulled me into the kitchen. She was like, "I want you to know that I know. And it's fine. But we got to talk about it." And I was like, "You know what?"
You know, like, what?
Did you know what she
knew? No, I had no idea. I was still, like, searching my brain for her.
Oh, wow.
And she was like, "I know that, like, you're in a relationship or something's going on with that girl or other girls or whatever."
Same girl you passed the note to?
Same girl.
Okay.
Mm. Yeah. We actually dated for 5 years from high school and then into college, but, wow. My mom was, you know, really good about it. I think she definitely was still like trying to understand, you know, what do I do with this? How do I deal with it? But she wanted me to know that she had my back, basically.
That's dope.
And she was just like, and I think it also comes from, you know, her upbringing, you know, being the different kid in the bunch. Her and her brother are the only Puerto Ricans in her family. All of my other aunts and uncles are Mexican. So, and the reason that I bring that up is, like, most of my aunts and uncles are lighter complexion. My mom and her brother, like, they were kind of the different ones, you know? So I think, just from her upbringing, she was like, "I know what this feels like to be discriminated. I know what it feels like to be different." So she just wanted me to know that, I needed to prepare for it.
Yeah.
So
I guess, you know, a few questions are, how did it, what was that like coming out at a all-girls Catholic school, both as someone who is queer and also someone who's an artist?
So I know that being a twin paid off. As a twin, we were both popular for that reason, and we were both involved in sports. So we had, desirable reputations in high school.
What'd you play?
I played mostly basketball and softball.
I mean...
Wow, I just walked right into that one.
Sam Kirk, I got a question for you real quick.
Yeah.
Are you nice?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. You still hoop?
Yeah, here and there. Okay. Yeah, whenever I can.
You think you could take guitar and one-on-one?
Every person in Chicago plays basketball.
I know. Listen, look, there was a time when we had a lot of outdoor courts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally, yeah. Yeah, so I think it just, you know, it played out a little bit in my favor. I remember walking into my next class, which was gym, of course, where you have to change in front of everybody right after this teacher reads this letter. And all the girls in the classroom, like, everyone knew, you know, it's an all-girls school.
Yeah.
It traveled, like, super fast, you know. So just their faces were like they saw a ghost, you know. And I was just like, "What? You want to talk about it?" And nobody wanted to talk about it.
'Cause they're all little bitches.
Yeah. Nobody wanted to talk about it. Nobody really had anything to say.
Did your sister say?
Shockingly, my sister was like, "That's disgusting. That's gross. Like I don't want to."
She didn't know about your relationship?
No.
Or her own?
She didn't. She didn't. Yeah. And I mean, now, a few years after, she was like, "I'm so sorry," you know?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I find that to be common. A lot of times when people are trying to figure that out, sometimes when you get a lot of hate, it's because some people are feeling the way that you're feeling. They don't know how to come out themselves. So,
Message
I think my sister.
To all the rabid homophobes.
Yeah.
Ooh, you might be gay.
Also probably not listening to this podcast, to be honest. But,
Moms know shit. though. They have a good sixth sense for
that. Without a doubt.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They just, it's in the air.
Yep.
Well, yeah. I don't know if it was, I mean, I imagine it wasn't as difficult, but when did you begin to tell people that you, or when did you yourself know that you were an artist? Because that is another kind of coming out, and I'm not associating the two, but to tell a working class family in Chicago that you are going to be an artist, in my experience, has not been the easiest thing in the world.
Again, I mean, it was pretty easy for me, but it, I didn't decide to make art a full-time practice until 2010. At that point, I had already been working in advertising for almost 10 years. I studied marketing and architecture in college.
Where'd you go to college?
I went to Columbia.
Here in Chicago? Mm-hmm,
Columbia, here in Chicago.
You graduated?
I graduated. I got two bachelor's degrees.
Two bachelor's degrees.
In 4 years?
I have two bachelor's degrees. I got in about five and a half, degrees. Interior architecture and marketing.
You're very learned.
Yes.
As they say.
Yes. Nice. And you're also like our third guest who's graduated from Columbia.
From Columbia.
Even though we've had about 70 that have gone.
Everyone drops out.
I have a lot of friends that went to Columbia, but, you know, didn't
never made it.
Follow
all
the way through. Okay. Yep.
Yeah.
Well. Well.
Yeah. So I was studying design and architecture, and at senior year, I decided I didn't want to do it. I didn't like the direction that the U.S. was going in design, and I didn't feel like my brain was going to be used in the best way with creating model homes and like model spaces.
Oh, you're talking about architecture.
So,
and was that the issue that there was these kind of
gentrified homes
or like micro McMansions cookie cutter bullshit?
Right. And there was a lot of, you know, like communities in the suburbs being built, and it was all these like just model home setups.
You felt complicit also in like the changing face of Chicago.
Chicago architecture, too, right?
Which has kind of this, you know, incredible history in some ways,
right?
Depending on who you ask. But.
Yes, exactly. I mean, I own a Greystone now for that reason, you know, like I love old Chicago architecture, which is part of the reason why I was interested in it. But
and what year is this that you're 2010?
Well, 2010, I changed my career path.
Okay.
So I quit advertising.
Oh, right. You were, so this is earlier.
I've been out of college for a long time.
Okay. Well, because we're not dissimilar in age.
No.
Okay.
No. Not too far. I got my degrees in 2002 and 2004.
Okay. I have no degrees. I'm cold. You feel me?
All right. It's corny, but
yeah. So
stand up. I'm gonna stand up for that one.
Yeah. Right. You can sit back down now.
Okay. All right.
So I went into marketing because I felt like it was the best of both worlds, business and creative, and worked in advertising for a while
in Chicago.
In Chicago.
Where were you working?
I was working. So I worked at the San Jose Group, which was mostly Latino based, and then I went to FCB, which turned into Draft FCB.
Yeah.
And then I did a couple, you know, fun things here and there on the side for like Dub Magazine when that was huge, and different car shows and stuff, just like for fun.
Well, so culturally, where are you at in this whole time though, right? You're a Southside kid, you're mixed.
Gay art.
What are you listening to? Where are you hanging out in this era?
Man, Funky Buddha Lounge.
Okay, let's talk about
Funky
it.
Buddha
right?
Lounge,
okay, let's talk about
Kitchen
it.
Kitchen Sink.
Yes.
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 It was my every single week.
Okay. Yeah. And what was drawing you to those spaces? The music, you wanted to dance, you wanted to
Music, dance. I would go out with my friend Bobby, who we're still, you know, great friends, and we would just dance from the minute we walked in until the music stopped. We didn't even know what time it was. We would dance nonstop for hours together.
Are you a house kid? Or what are you?
Definitely a house kid.
Yeah.
Hip hop.
Yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Blues, though. Blues. Listen.
Well, you're because Chicago.
Right.
Yeah.
How did you learn about music?
Just growing up in the neighborhood. I mean, we went to Pershing School for elementary school. And my sister and I, there was recess, so most of the girls would dance, you know. That's when we started to learn like footworks and the Tom and Jerry and like all these, you know, different dance moves, the Roger Rabbit. And we would like kind of battle each other on the basketball courts, on the side of the basketball courts, because the guys were playing basketball. We were dancing on the side. So that's really where I started to learn mostly about music and getting into music and dance.
What kind of things did you listen to?
Then I was mostly listening to a lot of R&B and hip hop.
Let's get specific.
Yeah. And that's like things you pick to listen to.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely things I picked to listen to. It was interesting because at school we were listening to hip-hop and R&B, but then when we went back home, it was mostly like house and freestyle. And that was just the difference between surroundings, you know? So, and then within the house, it was more soul and blues and everything because of my mom. So it was just this very different mix depending on who we were with. But I mean, I loved all of it.
Yeah. That's really, that's eclectic and beautiful. And I think also indicative of a moment probably.
Mm-hmm.
And that your parents or your mom, I guess, specifically, was your pops into music and culture? I mean, because you've mentioned your mom now a bunch in this lane, mm-hmm. you know, influencing you in terms of direction and maybe encouraging you as well to explore. Is your pops into it or is he not?
No, not really.
Okay, yeah.
My parents are so opposite.
Your pops is the European side.
Yeah, yeah. My father's European side. He is so country. Like, it's like, really? You grew up in Chicago?
Yeah, like, I'm like, what kind of country?
Well, he loves country music. He loves, you know, like, his ideal world would to live on like a farm and a
really?
Ranch. Yeah, even though he grew up in the city. Now he lives out in the suburbs. My parents are divorced. But yeah, no. My dad was like all country all day long.
And what was he wanting you to do ideally?
He didn't want us to even really go to the school that we went to. My mom pushed for that. My father wanted us to be and that's a lot of, you know, what's behind my work too. I don't really understand my parents' relationship. Like how they even came about, because my dad was really against a lot of the choices that my mom made, and I'm appreciative for the choices she made. But if it was up to him, we would have stayed probably in a predominantly white neighborhood, probably mostly in Bridgeport or Westlawn, and went to the schools in those neighborhoods.
How long have they been divorced?
Man, they divorced when I was 13. I'm 36 now.
Okay.
Whatever that math is. Yeah.
23 years.
Hey. Yeah, there you go.
It's okay, I'm Indian.
Yeah.
What's up?
I don't want to say it.
Fuck you.
Okay. All right. I'm Jewish. I knew the number too. Anyway, the point is.
Oh, because it's also your favorite number.
That's true.
Yeah.
It really is.
Oh, damn. I had something to. Never mind.
Okay. So, all right. So your folks split. I feel you, though. When I think about my parents, I'm like, it boggles my mind that they were together.
Yeah.
But okay, so let's get to that moment then where you're at, and I know FCB, like we do some work with them, and mm-hmm. they do a lot of work in Chicago. So you're there, you're creative there though?
I was kind of a hybrid, so I did mostly sports sponsorship and experiential for the first 6 years, and then I moved over and did a rotation program that made me an integrated marketing specialist. So I did every discipline, print, television, digital, you name it, and then I went into new business development.
Okay, so you're working both the account side and also...
Both account and creative, yep.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know anything about that.
A rare hybrid, though,
right?
in that world.
Yeah, both account and creative.
And what pushed you to leave the field?
So in 2010, I found myself... digital was really coming into play, and social media was a big thing, and I found myself doing more reverse mentorship. So I was, along with a lot of my peers, we were teaching our bosses and our supervisors, you know, how to mix this, you know, how to talk about it. They didn't really understand it. And I was doing a ton of work. You know, I was working crazy hours, and I asked my boss, you know, we got to do something about this. You know, like, I need a title change. I need a pay increase. I'm doing multiple jobs. And she came back and she was just kind of like, well, I can't give you the pay increase, but you can give yourself whatever title you want. And I was just like, well, I can give myself that, you know.
Yeah,
so
right.
I
didn't need your permission.
High priestess of the universe.
Right. Yeah. So I was like, you know, I'm not
CEO,
really challenged.
Like,
right.
Yeah,
so.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So I wasn't, you know, challenged in the way that I felt like I needed to be. I was dreading my job. And I put together an infographic as my resignation letter.
That's dope.
It's a bar. Yeah.
Wow.
And I
if only
I was
about
like,
that way every time.
I hope.
Yeah, I'm gonna tap you to make me one when I bow to something.
I hope you leave the interview that way. You know, right? Like midway.
I was drawing this infographic while talking to you because y'all ain't shit.
And I'm out. Right.
So I was just like, you know, if I give it to her and she understands it, then maybe we'll have a conversation.
Ooh,
but if I give it to her
test,
and she is like, "What is this?" then I'm out.
Oh,
so well, I gave it to her, and she was like,
amazing.
What is this?
That's
and I was like, it's an infographic that shows basically
my
what I've done.
Later.
Right. Yeah,
it showed
right.
what I had done over the last 8 years for the company and why I'm leaving.
Wait, so did they ever give you like a promotion in that time?
In the 8 years?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, okay. Absolutely. I guess I had several promotions, which were all great, you know, but there were six of us that were in this program, and at the pace that we accelerated, it was just kind of like, you have to do more, you know?
Yeah.
So I asked for it, and they couldn't deliver. And at the same time, a woman that I knew or that I know, I had done some design work for her because I was doing a lot of architectural design on the side just for fun. She had asked me to design two homes from her from the ground up on two separate acres of land. And I also got a commission that included 15 large-scale art pieces for a music venue out in Lincolnshire. And I was like, these two will carry me for a year. So I was like, all right, you know, I was like, the universe set this up, I think, for right. me to figure this out. So I was like, I'll do it. I could always go back to advertising. Like, I have a strong resume, and see where it goes. And here we are almost 9 years.
All right. So let's talk, because so those Lincolnshire pieces, they're murals.
Yeah, they're murals and a combination of installation pieces.
And did you already know, did you have in mind what you wanted to do?
I had no idea. You know,
because now, I mean, all right, so let's just set the table a little bit, because, you know, and this is a conversation I would love, you know, I don't want to just talk about your style, but to me, you know, your style is incredibly fanciful, romantic, and also realist, right? Because you know, you are representing the real body in in labor. I think you put on for, you know, populations who are at the margins of our culture and our society. Mm-hmm. We see them in a variety of real instances, but then via the color and technique, you also kind of heighten the realism. You know, it goes into the magically real. It you know, you delve into the imaginative.
Mm-hmm.
And so, is that what you were doing at that time, or how did that?
No.
Right. Okay. So it's the style has progressed. So I guess I want to just track the style a little bit. You know, how you get from, you know, 2010 Lincolnshire murals to, you know,
where I'm at now.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So when I was in advertising, I stopped painting for about 7 years, and I picked it back up. So I had a little bit of practice. But when I quit, this is one thing I tell so many artists: like, practice. Like, know what you're going to do before you quit. I quit, and I didn't have a solid style figured out. You know, like, I knew that I wanted to create, and I had been creating about culture and had been, you know, celebrating culture in different ways. But this commission was totally different. It was completely about music, classic rock, and some of the different artists that they were going to be showing in the venue. There's a little bit of like Jimi Hendrix and such. So there was a little bit of, you know, cultural overlap with some of the music themes that they wanted. But no, I hadn't figured out my style. Probably not until 2012 did I really realize, like, this is it. And I did a show at Artistic Genius. Do you remember Artistic
Genius? Yeah, yeah, yeah. Where was that, though?
That was in Pilsen.
Yeah.
Right off of 18th and Halsted, and I did a show there, and it was political. There was a lot on Rudy Lozano and different, you know, people from the neighborhood, and I was exploring, you know, different themes on just highlighting everyday people that I felt like should be celebrated a little bit more. And in developing that body of work, I started to notice like a pattern where the line work started to stand out to me. I didn't want to do so much shading and shadowing. I wanted to figure out, you know, how does the line flow through the entire piece and help to tell the story. And over the years, I've been getting more and more, you know, to ideally where I want that to go.
Yeah, because the line forms the articulation of the body for you.
Right.
Right. So what is the import of the line? Like, why, you know, that technique as opposed to a skewed realism,
the biggest thing was the line kind of came secondary. It was mostly about the patchwork of the color. One of the biggest things that I struggled with in showing a lot of these features is being mixed. One of the biggest things that I've had to like explain mostly is trying to get people to understand, like, my mom is several shades darker than me and my dad is several shades lighter than me. That doesn't mean that, you know, we don't mix or we don't come together. So in a lot of my work, you'll see different colors in the skin tones, and that's meant to show that I can be of one ethnicity and there can be a wide variety of different color and skin tones, and we should, you know, see each other as equal no matter what. And it was really piecing that together and figuring out, like, how do I make my mixed ethnicity present in a piece that is about myself without having to, like, throw my mom in it, or, you know, throw my dad in, or, like, do all of this, like, layered storytelling. How do I do that in just an individual piece? And it was mostly about that. So then the lines connected that together.
Right, because, I mean, it's obviously not overhanded. Like,
right.
You being in your pieces.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, all right, so 2012 to now, mm-hmm. and we, you know, keep in mind that we have, I think, a lot of young creatives who listen, you know, to the podcast. We have folks who are, I think, in traditional gigs who, you know, fantasize sometimes about the leap into the full-time creative life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is your career now. This is what yeah. you do.
All day, every day.
Right. So, yeah. So first and foremost, maybe just talk a little about the discipline of making. What is your routine, if you have one?
I definitely have a routine.
Let's talk about it.
Also, were you scared?
No, I wasn't scared because I didn't really come from anything. My sister and I were the first to go to college and graduate college in our family. So I was just kind of like, I've started from the bottom before, like I can do it again, you know?
I mean, you've come a long way in 6 years or 8 years or...
Thank you. Yeah. So I was just hungry to see, you know, what I could do more than anything. And I think the risk really, like, pushed me even more, which is, I know that's not common. But so for younger folks, my schedule, I typically have pretty standard business hours. I work Monday through Friday, except during mural season, I give myself weekends off. So I don't work Saturday or Sunday, but Monday through Friday, I usually work a 12 to 14 hour day. So 7 to 7 is pretty typical for me, but I don't answer email until the afternoon. I wake up and the first thing I do is I start creating. So unless there's something I know that's extremely urgent that I need to do on the computer, I don't touch the computer. And that's just because for me, the minute I wake up, that's when my best creativity is flowing. Like, whether it's fresh from dreams or just fresh mind, interruptions will crush it. So I try to get straight into the studio and create whatever I can.
You have a studio, or you've built a home studio, or where is your...
I have both right now.
Yeah.
I just started a residency at the Chicago Arts Department.
Congratulations, by the way. I saw that, yeah.
And when I came back from being in New York, I was bouncing kind of 50-50 between New York and Chicago, and I had a
studio.
We're so
glad
here.
You came back, by the way. That was a very wise decision on the city's part to lure you home.
A lot of people are grateful that I'm back. But I decided to invest in a home with my partner, and we converted one level to my studio. So I have a home studio, which is interesting. You need more discipline to have a home studio.
Yes, definitely.
Just 'cause easier distracted. But at the same time, that means I can get to work even faster, which I appreciate. So I jump right in. But yeah, I mean, I keep a pretty strict schedule.
When you jump in, when you say in the morning, are you creating with an idea in mind? Do you go in and freestyle? Are you working on a project? Does it vary?
It varies. It depends on, you know, week to week. These days, I usually always have a commission. So there's some commission work, but I definitely
get these bags. Sam yeah. Kirk, getting these bags.
Well, how do you not get burnt out and, you know, make, you know, you're making art for other people, but do you make art for yourself?
Oh, yeah. I make a good amount of art for myself as well. I mean, the biggest, I guess, way to see it is the work that's in the museums or the galleries, that's all the stuff I make for myself.
Okay.
And then I show it to the curators and, you know, they select what they want. A lot of the murals are commissioned.
Mm-hmm.
But not all of them are like under a theme. Like,
right. You kind of do your own thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Like,
we want a wall.
I'm not under, right.
This is the thing. Give right. us a sketch.
Yeah.
But and do you feel pressure to, I mean, I don't know, create something somebody wants or?
Not
know.
Anymore.
No.
I mean, I did in the beginning, you know, in the beginning, you kind of have to a little bit to develop your portfolio in
right,
public art.
Yeah.
So and people are always, you know, asking for different things. So yeah, in the beginning I definitely did, but now I don't really take those anymore.
All right, so you know, at this point you've been full-time for 6 years or so
in
the art, in your art
right now.
Yeah, you've been, yeah, at this point in your career you've been full-time for
I've been full-time for 8 years.
8 years since, yeah. 2010. Okay. Mm-hmm. Career highlights and, you know, high points for you. What are some of the bigger projects, things that in the last 8 years you've been most proud of? What are some of those things?
Without a doubt, the mural in Morocco is on the top right now.
Okay, so yeah, talk about that, because yeah. I saw that on the gram. I was super impressed. It was brilliant and beautiful. And how did it come about?
Like a commission for that.
Yeah.
So that was commissioned by Chicago Sister Cities International and World Business Chicago. They've been running a program with the city of Casablanca for 35 years. So this was the celebratory piece, or the way that they wanted to celebrate their 35 years of partnership. And Casablanca has a street art festival called Casa Muja that they've been running for the past 4 years, I believe. And they decided, how about we celebrate it with art? So they asked curator Nisa Page Lieberman, who runs the Wabash Arts Corridor, for some recommendations. And my name was in one of those recommendations. And the city of Casablanca, their events team, and the Sister Cities team picked me. I'm still trying to figure out if they knew I was a man, if I was a man or a woman.
Yeah.
Because we were the first women to do it out there. We were the first women to create a mural.
Oh, so you think they might have thought you were a guy?
Sam Kirk.
But they saw your work.
They saw my work.
Which it doesn't necessarily, it's genderless, I would say. But,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, eventually, obviously, they knew that I was a woman and we had this conversation. But with that trip, the hardest part was we kind of had to be quiet about it. Normally, I would have, like, shouted to the rooftops, like, I'm going to Africa. That's been on my list forever. And we're going to paint, you know. But we couldn't do that because it's illegal to be queer there. And if we got too much attention for being the first women, I'm completely out and create a lot of work around the LGBT community, then that would have been a thing. And it was just like, what could the security issues be? So we couldn't really talk about it until we got back.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So we went out there and we painted. I mean, we had an amazing time. It was such a beautiful experience. We were there for a month for the first 3 weeks. My partner's a professional dancer. She taught cultural dance to kids at a cultural center, seven different types of cultural dance, and I did a mural workshop. We both volunteered to do that, and then 1 week was just like going around with the Sister Cities crew, and then the last week we painted the mural. So
to keep that under wraps, that's crazy. And you're there for a whole month.
I know.
Yes. Well, I wrote about it. I wrote about it on my website. It was really hard.
Sure.
I mean, and we deal with that here, you know, in certain, even in our own neighborhood. We live in Little Village, and we deal with, you know, having to hide here in parts of Chicago and parts of the U.S. But there's not the risk of being, you know, going to prison.
Right.
You know, for it. So that was definitely challenging. And then it's challenging. It's like, how do you shut off from your partner for a month and then try to go back to being normal when you get back home? You know, that was the big challenge.
Did you all have to stay in separate spaces? And
we didn't. We were lucky enough to get a private home. And the gentleman whose home we were at had done a lot of work with the U.S. government. So he knew and he was completely fine. So we were fortunate to be able to have that. But like when we got there, the windows were all open. You can totally see in. So we had to like put up sheets. Otherwise, like, there was no, like, sitting next to each other on the sofa. So, like, simple things that people are just like, I'm going to go home
take
and, like,
for granted.
Put my feet up on your lap, you know? Like, we couldn't do that until we covered all of the windows and everything. So it was just kind of, like, odd.
Yeah.
Because I felt like I went back into the closet in a lot of ways. And my partner, she, I mean, she was great. She wore a headscarf every day,
and
every
single
day. I didn't.
Oh, okay.
No, I didn't. But she did. And for a couple reasons. One, to distract from me, because I dress a little bit more masculine, all of my tattoos, my hair, it gets some attention. But then also because being the first woman to do this out there, understanding women are going to see us painting on a 50-foot scissor lift doing things that they mostly see men do. It's important for them to see also, not just me and think like, oh, a Westerner, but to see another woman that looks similar to how they dress doing that kind of work. So she did it for both reasons.
Mm. What is your partner's ethnic background? If
you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
She's Jamaican, Costa Rican, and Irish.
Whoa.
Born and raised in Brooklyn.
Okay, the Jamaican, that makes more sense then. Yeah.
That's why you were in New York.
Yes.
Oh, so
that's
you
a big, that's okay. A big part of the reason okay. I was in
I was about to say.
I was curious to play in the art scene there.
Yeah.
And I did really enjoy it. And I also really wanted to feel what it felt like to be surrounded by different cultures and not have to jump through neighborhoods to experience that.
Very different.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very different.
Even my mom, like when she would come visit me, she was like, oh my God, I love this. And it was just like, I knew exactly why she was feeling that way.
Well, because your mom doesn't have to explain her existence exactly. In the same way that she does in
right.
Chicago.
Where yeah. did you live?
We lived in East Flatbush, Brooklyn.
Oh,
that's
okay.
Where my makes girlfriend sense. Was born and raised. Yes. Oh, wow. Yes. Yeah.
And then also saw that change, I guess, in that time too.
Totally. Yeah.
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 All right. So, we're kind of beginning to get to the point where, we have so much to talk about. And I don't want to miss the opportunity just to talk about the big mural that you just collaborated on. Mm-hmm. I've seen it everywhere. I mean, not only have I physically seen it, but it's been in the news. It's been on the news. It's part of the talk of the town.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to us about what the project is, where it is, and your collaborators.
So the project is called The Love I Vibrate, and it features a non-binary community member named Kiam. And my co-collaborators are Sandra Anton-Georgi and Andy Belomo. So it's three code leads.
And just salutes to Sandra. I don't know your other collab, but like Sandra is we at some point we should get her on. I'm a big fan of her work as well.
Yeah, she's an amazing artist in many ways.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but both of them are extremely talented artists. And we were basically three code leads, all queer women, which we felt was extremely important. But the purpose of the mural was to celebrate local, everyday people, which, of course, I was interested in. It's run through all of my work, but and to help to raise more conversations on our non-binary community members. It's a topic that is causing some confusion outside of our community, but there's also a lot of confusion within the community. For me, it was important because when I was a teenager, I would go to Boys Town to try to find acknowledgement, understanding,
something.
Figuring things
yeah.
out. But there was always one major thing lacking. You know, it was a space that was very white and there was no people of color. Or there are physical people of color, but not representation of people of color. So this piece, when we talked about the concept, we all agreed, like, if it's going to be one figure and we're going to, focus on celebrating one person, then it has to be a person of color and it has to be somebody that is doing good work in the community. And Kiam's doing amazing work around spirituality and healing. And just has such an interesting story that I think needs to be shared as well.
And this is, how big is the mural?
The mural is 15 feet by about 40 feet.
Yeah. Damn. It's a big one.
Yeah. What is like your process for collaborating and creating a mural like that large?
So for this piece, it's interesting. So I've collaborated with Sandra a couple times, and I've collaborated with Andy. This is the first time we've come together. and it's something that, we had kind of talked about for a while. But for this, especially when you have three lead artists, which is rare, usually it's like me and then I have some assistants or somebody that's a little bit junior and is trying
to
learn.
Shared vision.
Right. So yeah. With this, Andy actually jumped in and was like, I'm going to start, just developing some ideas. And she brought Kiam to the table as somebody that she thought we should consider to celebrate and kind of kicked off that direction. And then from there, looking at it, we were like, we already knew Sandra was going to do the portraiture because that's,
her specialty. Yeah,
that's her
absolutely.
Thing. So then Andy and I were like, okay, how are we going to make this background really make them shine and showcase them in a way that we feel like if you saw them on stage, because they're a performer, this showcases what they do, but then also gives the feeling that you need. And it was different for me because I do so much figurative work. Thinking about, you know, how does like kind of this abstract background also tell a story and share a story was different for me. But that's part of what I appreciate about collaboration is it challenges you to do things differently than you normally would. And it makes you, you know, just think about how you would add this into your current practice, or maybe change some things up in your current practice and do it differently.
And of course, folks could go see this. So where is the spot where folks can see it?
So this is at the Howard Brown location in Boys Town, right on Halston and Melrose. Mm-hmm. This is the second piece I've done with Howard. I did one with their drop-in center, their homeless youth drop-in center at Broadway Youth Center. And they've been amazing supporters of the arts. So
nice. And people, of course, can find your work all over the city. But are there you know, galleries, smaller spaces, gallery shows that you have coming up in the future where people could also see your studio work?
So I have a residency now at the Chicago Art Department. Every second Friday, I'll definitely be putting some new work up. And during that time, I'm more than, you know, willing to have people come by and drop into the studio part of that space and see what I'm working on. There is a lot of new work that I'm developing. I started doing a series on layers of glass last year, and the Mexican Museum added it to their permanent collection, so now I have to make more.
Yeah.
But I'll be doing a lot more of that.
Cool. And you have the event on the 20th, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Tell us, what is this event?
Secret Walls, yeah.
Yeah, no, I know.
Okay. Yeah, be like, what is this? What are you talking about?
Of course, we're super excited to have you, but yeah, I mean, I we probably know as much about it. Maybe you know more about it than I do. I don't know. You know about it.
Yeah, I know about Secret Walls. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is October 20th is kind of the year anniversary of the Apple Store on Michigan Avenue.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we're doing a Secret Walls battle that you're a part of.
Right.
And it is I think that this is the first ever virtual Secret Walls battle. Secret Walls is a street and graffiti art battle competition league that started in London and then now is in Los Angeles and all over the world. But you're partnering. Do you know who your partner is that night?
With Ruben Aguirre.
Yes.
Which is going to be very cool. I'm a huge fan of his work.
As am I.
And love it. But I'm so curious to see what black and white is going to be like.
Right. For you especially, that's a bit of an anomaly.
Yes.
Yeah, true. And of course, and you guys are battling on an iPad, mm-hmm. in the Procreate program.
Right.
Versus
Max Sansing and Steph Skills.
Yeah, so it's going to be a very hot battle. That's October 20th. Yeah. People are welcome and invited to come.
Yep.
Where can people find you on the interconnected networks if they want to be in tune, both in terms of kind of what you're doing in the city, but also as people, you know, want to get you on their wall or commission you for various projects?
Yeah, for sure.
What was the best way to be in touch?
Everything is I Am Sam Kirk. IamSamKirk.com. I Am Sam Kirk on Instagram. I don't really use Twitter, but Facebook. I'm mostly Instagram.
So are you Sam Kirk?
I am. Yes.
True
that
indeed.
Happened because Sam Kirk was already taken. So I was like, what's the next kind of clever thing? I am Sam Kirk.
Yeah, Kirk is a very Irish name.
Very. Mm. Yes.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. My partner and I, we both have Scotch-Irish last names. She'll kill me if I say her last name, but.
You said Jamaican.
Costa Rican and Irish. Irish is the only thing that we share in ethnicities. Yeah, that's the only overlap. Mm-hmm.
Oh. Well, Sam, you know, you are a Chicago treasure. The whole city is glad that you are home.
Thank you.
If you ever leave, don't go too far. Okay,
I'll try.
She bought a house. She's
She here. And well, wow. Okay, or not. But you're gonna travel a lot.
I love to travel.
Yeah, no,
I travel
good.
A lot.
Travel, just stay traveling. And,
Kevin
know,
just wants you to like be based here. You can go wherever.
Oh, I'm based here. Okay, I'm definitely
good.
Based here.
Okay, you know what it is.
Kevin's really concerned.
I am concerned.
I get
worried when the best folks leave. So I'm glad that you're here. We're you know, thank you for being in the corner store tonight.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
And
thank you.
Yeah. Yo, we want to thank DJ Exist for the beat.
Langston Olsen for the art.
Big ups, Todd Manley at WGN Radio.
And Max and Dami, the corner store interns.
Salutes to our super producer, DJ Cash Era.
You can keep in tune with the Corner Store at cornerstore_pod on Instagram, Twitter, and SoundCloud.
Also, you can stream and download the Corner Store wherever you listen to podcasts.
And please rate and subscribe and comment on iTunes.
Please, y'all, consider giving us those 5 stars.
Thank you for listening.
We're going to see you next week.
The Corner Store is brought to you by Stolen Spirits.